Welcome to the Driving Eureka podcast, where we share ideas and advice for helping you find, filter, and fast track big ideas. Let's go! Hi, I'm Trip Babbitt, advisor to global organizations on the Deming philosophy and host of the Deming Institute podcast.
And I'm Doug Hall, inventor, speaker, teacher, and whiskey maker. I'm also the founder of the Eureka Ranch and author of the Driving Eureka book.
This is episode number 7 of the Driving Eureka podcast. This podcast corresponds with Doug Hall's weekly newsletter at doughall.com. Just look for newsletters. This week, our featured story is titled, Will It Be the Best or Worst of Times in 2019? The Driving Eureka book segment is called, It's a Dickens of a Time. And the Brain Brew Whiskey Academy segment discusses paired comparison testing, and the craft cocktail recipe is the Spanish Manhattan. Your newsletter, Doug, talks about, will 2019 be the best or worst of times for you? And it's interesting to me, just as much as you like Ben Franklin, and you kind of got all of his stuff and know kind of his history, Charles Dickens, my guy. I love Charles Dickens. As a matter of fact, when I went to London, I did the little Fleet Street tour going by ye old Cheshire Cheese and some of the pubs that he frequented, you know, on your way up to St. Paul's. But I really like his stuff. And matter of fact, I just watched the Man Who Invented Christmas last night. So it's a good movie about him writing a Christmas
carol. It's an awesome movie.
You've seen it.
I just saw it. We just stumbled into it, but it's well worth watching. It's really well worth watching.
Oh, absolutely. It's a great movie. So let's pivot over to, will 2019 be the best or the worst of times for you? You're talking here quite a bit about kind of looking ahead as far as things that are happening. So I almost got the feeling when I read this segment that you're starting to feel like we may be headed into a recession or something. You kind of, there's some words in there that you're using that make me a little nervous.
Well, yeah, this is a bit of a rant. This is about
okay.
A rant. This is where, you know, being an old fart, I guess, I've been doing this for 40 years. I mean, I guess it's a rant. There's no way around it. The feature story was, will it be the best or the worst of times for you in 2019? And what happened is I was sitting there sipping a little bit of our fine whiskey, and on the news, this was the day that General Motors announced the shutdown.
Okay.
And it was one story after the other. And I watched the U.S. networks, and then I turned to the CBC, the national, who, you know, tend to be quite balanced, very balanced in my view, not Canada. They think they're extreme, but I think they're amazingly balanced compared to what we see in the U.S.
Okay.
I mean, they're not the BBC, but they're in that direction. And as they laid out, and then they brought experts on to talk about things, and they talked about, and I don't care what you want to talk about. If you want to talk about that it's because of the trade rules, things going on, the banking stupidity, whatever you want to talk about it, of, you know, the tax credit thing that put a one-time bump in the thing. I don't care what you want to talk about it. There is a definite undercurrent that things are going to go down. What goes up goes down.
Mm-hmm.
And it just doesn't go up perpetually. It goes up and go down. And I have lived through this over 40 years. I have lived through this many times, you know, as it's gone up and gone down. And so I was reminded of Dickens' 1859 novel, A Tale of Cities, where he said it was the best of times, it was the worst of times.
Mm-hmm.
And what I've learned from this is that when you reinvent yourself and you have technology and you have something that is meaningfully unique, it is truly the best of times when it goes down, because everybody else huddles, becomes the huddled masses. And when I first started the Eureka Ranch, it was a time of recession, and we jolted because we had new news, new things. We were a brand new company, and we caught a big wind, got to work for Walt Disney and Pepsi Cola back when Pepsi Cola was the apple of the day, you know, Michael Jackson and all
sure.
This. I'm really dating myself now back in time, you know, and it was really cool. And when the next time it came, we didn't have something and we suffered. The next time there was a recession was when we really started into innovation engineering back in 08. Okay. And we really started to push into that. And as I'm sitting here now, looking at the potential for it, you know, as we just announced that innovation engineering has, you know, the systems approach to innovation has gone from a beta to ready to go. I'm excited. I mean, I'm excited about the potentials for doing this. And the reason I bring that up is because most people who write books as I do and who speak and who do stuff, they preach but don't practice. They talk a lot of stuff. They tell you to do things, but they don't live it themselves. And I'm a great believer in learn from people that actually do what they're talking about. And so now really is the time. Now is the time to invest in big ideas, the big, bold, patentable breakthroughs. I mean, get going now. Don't wait. It's also the time to invest in yourself. You've got to get yourself prepared in this crazy free agent economy that we're in now so that you can think and work faster and smarter. And lastly, it's important to invest in your team. You've got to get your team really ready so that whatever happens, you're ready to pivot, adjust, and take advantage of the opportunities, because there's going to be tremendous opportunities coming, tremendous opportunities coming. And so it's just as we get to the end of the year, as we start to think about things, as we hear the chaos of the global economy, whether it's Brexit or the craziness in the U.S., whatever it is, and I'm not taking any political sides on this, but there is definitely high uncertainty going on right now. Get yourself ready. Invest in innovation. If you're meaningful, unique, that's going to make the difference when the economy goes tough, because then you've got something to pull yourself through and you come out stronger, is what I've learned. You come out stronger out the other end when you have it than when you don't have it. When you don't have it, you struggle for some time.
So, Doug, what do you see? You made the comment there that good things are coming. So what do you see? I mean, why would you say that? Because, you know, if everybody else is retreating, why is Doug? Because you have an interesting perspective anyway. But why do you say that?
Well, because we have spent, in our case, and in some folks that we're working with, have made investments in technologies that dramatically increase speed, in our case, and decrease risk. I mean, we've got a whole new project management platform that's based for accelerating innovations that is absolutely ridiculous in how much faster it makes teams. New education courses, our new online courses that are just a mind leap forward. When you have something that is a point of difference and customers are sitting there and they're struggling, they're looking for people who can help them work faster and smarter. And whether it's software, I was just today, I was looking at some software that can help us with the whiskey business, with our marketing, making it even more effective. Well, when times are tough, people are out looking for something that can help them break out of it, because they don't want to just sit there. They get to a point where, the class is in. They're mad as hell and they're not going to take anymore. They're like, well, we've got to do something. We can't just be a victim. I got to do something. And they're looking for things. And I think, and we happen to be on the right side of the curve here, in the, you know, that we have amazing new stuff. I mean, we just introduced this thing. The world doesn't even know about it. And so with these last changes that have gone through since the first of the year, we're really set up to go do it. We've got that portfolio, and with other stuff coming that are going to just do amazing things.
Okay. Well, let's just take a minute and kind of cover off, you know, we don't want to make this a big advertisement type of thing, but what, just because we haven't really let the audience know, what are the offerings of the Eureka Ranch and innovation engineering and all those types of things? Just, can you kind of just, not a big deep thing, but just kind of what they are and.
Yeah. So you can, I mean, people can look at my line, but in the simplest sense, we have Eureka Inventing and we have innovation engineering. Eureka Inventing, we find, filter, and fast track big ideas for you. So if you want patentable breakthroughs with Eureka Inventing, we can very quickly get you some big ideas and get you going. Okay, to restart the curve and get you on the path towards profitability.
So is that, does that mean that you're kind of doing it for them?
Well, we're taking the lift. We're doing the heavy lifting, but we're doing it with them. But we're taking on probably 70% of the responsibility, 70 to 80%.
Okay.
So it's collaborative because we don't want it out invented here, but it is we're taking the heavy lifting.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it's a bit of a jolt, if you would, to get things going. I mean, my books have been called Jumpstart, and they really are a jumpstart. On the other side, for most people today, now the new economy is going to be different. If this happens, they're going to want the jolt. And then the Eureka inventing is going to go flying because it's very fast. We compress 9 months into like a week. I mean, it's very, very intense. And so that's why it's been so popular for so many years. But on the other side, that gets you an idea, and that's nice, or a couple ideas, or a portfolio, whatever. But it gets you basically some ideas. What people are looking for more and more is sustainability. They're looking for the ability to do it themselves. And so that's where innovation engineering is, where what we do is we teach you how to find, filter, and fast-track big ideas. In other words, we enable you to be able to do that. Now, that you can be the organization, it can be your team, or it can be an individual in their own career. So we have offerings for people, for teams, and for companies. Because sometimes the person's ready, but the team or the company isn't. Sometimes the team's ready, but the corporation isn't. And so we work with the willing is the way we work. And we've got online, and we've got live, and we've got software tools, and we've got all kinds of stuff that people can use. But the basic idea is, do you need to basically get the thing turned around and get going? That's Eureka Inventing. Or do you really want to bring this into your culture and do it? And that's what innovation engineering is about.
Okay. All right. And it's primarily those two broad categories of things. You've got the Eureka Inventing and then the innovation engineering system. And is it a natural flow then for people to, would you say most people would then, well, I guess it would depend, but would start with Eureka Inventing? And who is the customer for that? I mean, is it somebody that they're desperate because their revenues are starting to go down, or maybe they're trying to get to the next level and they need something to happen right away? Who are the types of people that are using Eureka Inventing today?
Well, when the economy's good, we're seeing a lot more investing. Now, we've been in a beta test, so we've been very selective on who can get innovation engineering. But in general, when the economy's good, people are more interested in investing in their people and in their systems. When the economy is bad and they need something quick, they jump on Eureka Inventing.
Got it.
And then they'll transition. So you'll see both, and it really depends on where it is. The general people who bring in Eureka Inventing will be people who are responsible for the business. So it might be a director of marketing. It might be head of R&D. It might be a new business development. It could be various stakeholders. It could be the CEO. Could be bringing it in. It's somebody who basically wants to make more money. They want to, what's my friend Sergio Zeman says, he says, sell more stuff to more people for more money. And that's the primary thing that we're doing. Although I will tell you, probably 40% of our business now is not working on products or services, but it's on systems, how to reinvent systems. And so there's a lot more work on systems because people are getting used to the fact that they got to reinvent their systems. Whether it's a system for go-to-market, whether it's a system of operations, customer service, you know, whatever it might be. I remember years ago we worked on the American Express Black Card, the Centurion card, the high-end $2,000 card. And the idea was the card's going to sell for $2,000 to figure out the rest of it. So we did that. And then after we did that, next thing you know, we had the customer service group and we ran a couple sessions with them, projects, to figure out how to support the people that were paying $2,000 for a credit card. And so it was systems work, which is common these days.
Okay. It's time now for the Driving Eureka book excerpt with legendary inventor Doug Hall. All right. Well, let's move to our second segment here, our book excerpt. I've been practicing saying that, Doug. It's a hard word for me to say for some reason. The Driving Eureka book excerpt. You keep on this Dickens theme, in it. And it looks like, as I remember from the newsletter, that you had done a speech in the UK to a marketing group of some sort, and you kind of made a joke about that, and it kind of, for some people laughed, and most it was like a lead balloon. I don't know. It's hard for me to imagine. I still got the picture in my mind from a speech I went to that you did with the baby, and you said no whining. You know, that's just it's forever embedded in my head. But anyway, yeah.
The UK Marketing Society has been very kind to me over the years. I've done a number of different events. I may be doing another one next year with them. And it was their annual conference, and it was December. And I got up and I said, it's the best of time. And I literally quoted Dickens. I'm going to give you now more of it from the opening segment, but I just figured I had to do this as a bookend pair because it's just too fun. I said, it is the best of times. It is the worst of times. It is the age of wisdom. It is the age of foolishness. It is the season of light. It is the season of darkness. We have everything before us. We have nothing before us. We are going direct to heaven. We are all going direct the other way. And as you mentioned, a few laughed, but most didn't, because they figured they were going the other way. And the point here in this book excerpt from Driving Eureka is that the life cycle from monopoly to commodity used to take decades. Today, because of the internet, it's often measured in less than a year. And so this is Joseph Schumpeter's creative destruction, that those that don't innovate are destroyed by those that have embraced a mindset of never-ending continuous innovation. And I go on to explain in here, so just to put some meat to the conversation that we just had associated with my rant, we did a survey in 2011 for the U.S. Department of Commerce. Now, so 08, things go to crap, and things went bad. And so we went in 3 years later and we asked people, we asked CEOs is what it was done on, where they were, you know, versus 3 years before. And we separated them into companies that were innovators and non-innovators based on their self thing. They said, are you an innovator? Are you not an innovator? Okay. And we asked them some questions and we got that answer. And on sales growth, those that were innovators, from 08 to 11, in 11, their sales were up 84% versus where they were in 08. And non-innovators were up only 4%. Profits had gone up 96% for innovators and only 13% for non-innovators. Okay, so it's not like the non-innovators weren't better, but it was a struggling better. And then lastly, employee growth. Innovators had increased employment by 64% versus plus 1% for non-innovators. Now, these were primarily small and mid-sized companies, so very sensitive to these kind of things. And what's interesting is after we did that survey, we've done some others in the qualitative interviews, and I've done some quantitative interviews over in the UK and with some different companies, finding very similar patterns that they did this. And the most interesting thing about this is – we went in deeper and asked people how much of your sales were in products or services that they didn't offer 3 years before. Okay?
Okay.
So they're up, but I wanted to figure out why. And sure enough, those people that were innovators, 37% of their sales were in products or services they didn't offer 3 years before versus 19%, almost double. So they – what had happened is they hadn't just stayed there. They had changed. They didn't sit there and whine, waiting for it to come back. They changed. They did something different. And when it came to the number of customers, you know, we've talked about new customers on this podcast a number of times about the whiskey testing. Make sure you go after new customers, not just existing customers. And sure enough, when we asked, where did you get your sales from? Innovators, 43% of their sales came from new customers versus just 23% from non-innovators. So what it says is if the economy goes bad, and frankly, even if it doesn't go bad, you got to do something, man. you got to get some new offerings that are meaningfully unique, and you got to go take them to new customers. If you do that, 3 years from now, you can be twice the size you are now in profits and up 84% in sales growth. That's what we're talking about here, folks. Grow or die. That's what it's about. So, Trip, I really think, is it the best of times or worst of times? Is a decision we make inside ourselves as to what are we going to do about it? Are we going to do something? Or are we going to just sit there and say, woe is me? I mean, if there's one thing I hate about a lot of the talking head news things is there isn't a lot of talk about, you know, optimism and what are you going to do about it? There's a lot of blame game that goes on.
Yeah.
Well, the people that are passing the blame, they got to look at themselves. Are you leading your organization? Are you leading yourself to new things? And same goes for your career. Are you leading your career to new places or not?
That makes sense. I, you know, one of the things as you're talking there, and you as you did the survey of the sales and the profit and employee growth, is so what would be a trait? You know, how do you assess a company? In other words, I mean, I'm sure it's not a clear a pile as innovators versus non-innovators, but, you know, and some of it has to do with self-reporting. But how would you, if you went into a company, what are the things that you're looking for to see if they're really innovators or right mindset? Because we go back to the time you admittedly said when you first started Eureka Ranch, you know, they either had to have the right culture or you wouldn't work with them, you know, type of thing. So what would some traits be of a company that innovates?
Well, and you're right. But here's the difference. If I go back 30, 40 years ago when I started the ranch, I mean, it was. We basically sold to people who got it. Now, if we who had the culture to go do it, now if we did that, we'd have no business because it's gotten tough. I mean, it's just not the same. It's just not the same. We know. And so we've had to build systems to adapt to it. And so if I go back into the data of the kind of traits, because one of the beauties is we have all of this data now over decades. And so we've been able to – Greg Lemon at our place, our statistician, has done some amazing research on it. And we found a number of things. One of the things we found is we ask people the simple question, how do you spend your time? And there's some words there, but there's basically three options, one of which is proactive, one of which is reactive, responding to client needs and that kind of stuff versus, you know, doing leading. And then there's a neutral thing in between. And what we do is we look at the ratio between percent, and you have to add to 100%, mm-hmm. you know, how you spend your time. And we look at the ratio of time you're spent doing proactive things versus reactive things. And that is amazingly predictive of what kind of culture you've got. When people are in a firefighting reactive mode, then great things aren't going to happen. And so that's a key determinant.
Okay. This is the Brain Brew Whiskey Academy podcast, where we're going to take you behind the scenes on what it takes to build a whiskey distillery business. The Eureka Ranch team, led by Doug Hall, are creating a craft whiskey company like has never been done before. All right, well, let's move to our segment three, the Brain Brew Whiskey Academy. I think we had tossed around a few ideas before about what we might talk about here other than the craft cocktail. I think we kind of landed on that we wanted to do the importance of paired comparison testing. So, you know, why don't you share a little bit about kind of what that is and how you're using it, you know, at Brain Brew. And I think you made the mention that it's kind of a secret weapon for winning competitions. So how does that all fit together?
Yeah, if you want to win competitions, folks, this is the answer. I guess that's all we got to do. How to win double golds in San Francisco and at the North American Championship and get a 95 you know, in the Ultimate Spirit Challenge. Yep, this is how we do it. I'm going to tell you the secret right now. And it's actually the secret to making amazing products or services. It's called the pair comparison test. So last week we talked about single product tests. We asked people how likely they are to buy it and how new and different it is. With paired comparison, we don't ask in the absolute. We ask relative to another offering. So say I have two products. The simplest example is the old Pepsi challenge, for those of you who are old enough to remember that. We have product P and product Q. Which one do you like better? Do you like P or do you like Q better? Pepsi's preferred over Coke or whatever. Right. That's the same thing we do here. And it is our bread and butter. Take two whiskeys, set them in glasses, taste one. Which one would you be more likely to buy? Which one is more new and different? Same kind of way that we talked before. Then we'll ask other questions, you know, which one is easier drinking, which one tastes like it's been aged longer, which one tastes like it would be more expensive, a number of other traits, smoothness, aftertaste, you know, whatever things that we want to ask. And that test tells you where you're standing up. And what you're looking to get is, in our case, we like to get a 2-to-1 win, which means 67% to 33%. So 1/3 like this one and 2/3 like us. That's the standard we're trying to get to. Is to be preferred. And usually when you start out, you lose, or you're a tie. You know, you're just as good as, which means you're a commodity for all intents and purposes. What you want to do is then you start to do these cycles over and over again until you start to get to a win. And that's when you really learn it. And this is something that no one in the damn industry does. I mean, I don't think I've never heard in 30 years, I've been doing this 40 years, 30 years in the spirits industry, I've never heard of another company do a paired comparison test ever. And I've worked with the big names, never seen them, never heard them doing them. And definitely not in our case where we do them in the hundreds of tests on things to optimize products and to make it right. And you can do them overnight. You do them fast, quick. They're pretty easy to do. You just go to some bars or different venues and different places that you can do them, or do them at your distillery or brewery. Work with a buddy at a brewery and do them over there. You can do them real fast, and it is amazing. And that is how we have a product called Noble Oak that we do with one of our partners, with Edrington folks, and it's won all the big awards, and as well as many of our others, Big City Whiskey and others have won, you know, huge scores and huge awards. And it's because instead of us saying my opinion is, we've run the paired comparisons. We've run the paired comparison test to get it right. And it truly is a secret. I don't know how you do product development if you don't have a paired comparison test. So, I just don't know how you can do it.
Let's start with beer, then I'll go to whiskey. But, you know, then are you comparing it against other IPAs, or you just pick one IPA that you know, if you're in that category? Is that what you're, is that kind of the way that you're looking at it? Or how, or even taking the whiskey, is it, you know, a, you know, smoky one versus a spicy, you know, how do you
pick
who you're comparing, right?
It depends on what you're trying to do. Sometimes you're doing it against yourself. So like the way our products are getting better every time. Every couple of months, our products are better. And that's because we continue to test against ourselves and find a way to make it better and better and better. And so it's never ending improvement. Sometimes we usually will take a product that costs twice what we are. You know, we might, you know, our products normally sell for about $35. So in the whiskey business, we might be taking against $75 or $100. You know, there's a bunch of $100 products that are kind of excessive from a price standpoint in my mind. I mean, they're wonderful products, but they're just expensive. And so what we want to do is to take one of those luxury products. You know, we'll take a product that's 18 years, 10 years, 12 years, go against our time compression stuff that is, you know, I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's just weeks or a few months old, not years old. And compare it against that to see how we do.
Okay. All right. Well, let's move to our Brain Brew Whiskey Academy craft cocktail recipe. And you've chosen the Spanish Manhattan Sweet Luxury, something I've had one Manhattan in my life, and I don't even remember what it tasted like. So What's the story behind the Spanish Manhattan?
Well, as I said in the newsletter, I hope we don't have a recession, but if we're going to have one, let's enjoy a bit of luxury taste in the process. In other words, let's have a good time as we're doing it. So the classic Manhattan is made with bourbon, rye, and some sweet vermouth. And you can do different ratios. We tend to do a 2-to-1 of the whiskey to the other. And so what I found is in playing around with different things, other rich things like sweet vermouth, one of the things there is a sherry called Pedro Ximenez or PX Sherry. And you can usually get a bottle for about $30, a pretty decent one. And I suggest you keep it in the fridge because it's a wine-based thing. So you want to keep it cold because it'll oxidize on you. And the classic would be of a Manhattan style would be 1 ounce of PX Sherry and 2 ounces of a good rye. Now, we have a Noble Oak rye. Or you use one of your local craft whiskeys ryes. There's a lot of good ryes out there nowadays. And rye is pretty big. Rye is, remember, is the IPA of whiskey. It's the bigger taste. But in this case here, you need it to stand up to the sherry. And it's a pretty amazing drink. I mean, it's really quite nice. In fact, now I sometimes push it a little bit more because I like mine a little bit more whiskey forward. And so on this, I'll do a 1/2 ounce of the PX Sherry and 2 ounces of the Noble Oak Rye. And I got to tell you, the PX Sherry is really intense. And so it just balances it out, takes some ice and stir it my lucky 13 times. And it's an amazing drink. It's an amazing drink. If you want a nice sipping at the end of the night, you want to sit there and have something pretty luxurious or you've got somebody special coming. In fact, as I'm thinking about this, we're going over a friend's house on Friday night, and I think I'm going to bring the PX with me to make for them, and I'll bring the rye with me because it has just got just incredible richness to it. And part of it is our rye is it's a double oak rye, so it's pretty amazing to begin with. But there's a lot of good ryes out there that you can use.
So the taste of it, is it a sweeter taste? How would you describe it? I mean, other drinks.
There's a touch of sweetness to it, but it's really rich. It's got layers and layers of flavor. I mean, it washes over you with just layers of flavor. And what happens is the sherry with the rye, it's rounded. It's not harsh. It doesn't bite. I mean, you put it with some good ice to it. Because it's just got this smoothness and elegance, luxurious, decadent. I mean, these would be the kinds of words I would give to it. It is not a refreshing cocktail. It's a big, mind-opening drink.
Well, I'll definitely have to try that. Is there a PX Sherry that you recommend or a couple of them that you recommend?
No, there's a bunch of different ones. Alvear is what we use. If you look in the show notes, you can see a picture of it that we use a lot. But there's others that you can use and find the one that's like with all of the cocktails. You know, it's find what you like. You know, here I'm saying do a 2-to-1. And I'm also saying, you know, do 2 ounces of rye to 1/2 ounce of sherry. I mean, find what is yours. You know, this is not about following rules. It's about making what works for you.
Okay. And just one final question before we close out this podcast episode. And maybe it should be not maybe every time we do an episode, but kind of an update on, because I know you got like approvals coming through in Ohio and those type of thing is kind of the state of the distillery type of thing, maybe as far as kind of where you're at.
Well, I've mentioned on here before that if you want to create a distillery, the number one thing you have to have is patience. You have to have patience because we've been a week from opening now for months of what we've been doing. And part of it is the people doing permits and inspections and that, there just aren't a lot of distilleries. So it's the first time they're doing one. And they go, well, maybe this thing you need to do, this thing you need to do. And we've been operating in partnership with somebody else. But the good news is that the distillery has the electric, because we need a lot of electric for our time compression machines. It's not Back to the Future, but it's a pretty significant amount of power we have to put in. So the electric panels are in, which are ridiculous in size. The ceiling's in, the insulation's in, the heating and cooling's in, the drainage systems are in. We've got one inspection done. We've got two more to come this week. Hopefully this week we will get our occupancy. We're also within days from the state of Ohio, so all goes well. Again, a week or two, we should be open. It is mind.
A week or two or 5 months, whatever, somewhere in there. Yeah. Okay.
Got it. Takes forever. So what you have to do is to just be productive at the other side and work through. We're getting bottles. We got bottles on order coming in. We've got our labels. We got some of the labels approved. You can work TTB. You can't do this linearly. You got to keep working all of the different parts at the same time. And that's about how you got to do it. I mean, it's we're close. We're close.
Cool.
Our big thing will be the Craft Whiskey Show in Minneapolis. That's when we're going to open it up, and we're going to start to get some beta testers who want to get into the – add this as a new business model to help them make more money.
Oh, good. We'll look forward to future episodes of finding out how the trials and tribulations and the patience game that you have to play in order to build this distillery. So,
well, and we have set a date, because you have to set a date at some point. So Martin Luther King weekend on January 19 and 20 is going to be the grand opening of the distillery. And so we've got some bands coming. We're going to have we'll broadcast it on Facebook Live, parts of it. And we've got folks coming. Our partner from over in England is coming over. And so it should be quite a spectacle, actually. So, Tripp, you're going to have to come down and maybe do some interviews with people as they're doing it, because we'll be unveiling our Riverboat line of whiskeys and all of that stuff, too. It should be quite a weekend.
I'll probably do that, because my wife, my daughter's 21st birthday is that weekend, but my wife is taking her and some of her friends to Disney World for it. So I wasn't invited.
Well, it's a girl's time. I got that. Well, then you could just come here and have a guy's time and just drink too much whiskey. No
problem here.
We're not allowed to say excessive. We can't say excessive. I didn't say that. No. Drink a proper amount of healthy whiskey. That's the way we have to do it.
There's only so much I can drink anyway. So yeah. Well, self-regulated.
I do too. I've just found that it's just not fun when you drink too much. It really isn't.
Yeah, that was only in college. So
that's right. When you're stupid.
Exactly. Okay, that concludes the seventh episode of the Driving Eureka podcast. Because we appreciate you as a listener, we are offering for a limited time four things. A 1 hour abridged audio of the Driving Eureka book. A subscription to the Driving Eureka newsletter, which contains weekly advice from Doug Hall on how to find, filter, and fast track big ideas. And the newsletter has other offers that are not made public. The Driving Eureka prescription for success: you answer questions and we'll help you assess your ability to find, filter, and fast track big ideas. And you get advice on how to grow your ability to innovate. And the last item: access to a Doug Hall interview with a radio legend. To get these offers, go to www.doughall.com/podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to the Driving Eureka podcast on iTunes.